It's time for Game Day, brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air, with your hosts, Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario.
Experiencing a few technical difficulties at the moment, but we'll get him hooked up here in just a moment. We're excited. We've got Notre Dame and Georgia Tech this afternoon. It's a 3:30 start on ABC down in Atlanta, which should be interesting. Second road game. Hey, we got you, Tim. How you doing?
I'm on here. I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened.
Hey, gotta love technology, right?
You know, I want to make sure that Rocky didn't feel so bad that he couldn't get connected with us last week.
Thank you for doing that, Tim. Thank you.
How are you doing, Rock?
I'm fine, thank you. Nice to be with you again. Thanks for having me back.
Well, as we ended the last interview, we said we just hit the tip of the iceberg when it comes to talking to you. If I remember correctly, we ended up in we just got drafted in the 16th round for Notre Dame and the Pittsburgh Steelers. So tell me.
That's right, a very highly touted 16th round
draft. That's right.
There you go.
That's right.
I like that. I like
well, the story that you gave us last week about how you're sitting around and you guys are just watching TV, and then all of a sudden the local news tells you basically that you got drafted in the 16th round. What a crazy story that was.
That's right. Well, that was the experience at that time. It was just like, oh, hey, congratulations. And then we went on with the rest of our discussion at that time. Unlike today, you know, where everybody is has parties. People are all over, covered by the media, and who's going where and so on. It wasn't so much, not when you're the 417th person pick. If you were the number one draft choice, it might have been, but not so much when you're down the line. So it was an afterthought. But
hey, Rock,
one of the things, we didn't get a chance to talk last week, just about the Pitt game, although it was a wonderful game, as we well know, and we played very, very well. You know, my experience with playing against University of Pittsburgh was I played in the when they ran the clock for the whole second half and no timeouts. It was 69-13 or whatever that final score was. I played in that game. And then I remember coming to playing Pitt my senior year. And it was my last game. So here it was my last. We're on the road, and so we're here in Pittsburgh. I don't know whether I shared the story with you, but we're here in Pittsburgh. We're staying at the hotel down at the Point, and I'm walking out, and it was the night before the game, and I didn't have to go with the team at the time, and so I said, "Oh, let me go for a walk," and I walked out and. You know, looked across the rivers on this hillside over there, the big Elko sign that took place. And I was walking down the streets, looking all over, and, you know, thinking to myself, only based on preconceived ideas and perceptions, because I hadn't really spent any time in Pittsburgh. Like, oh, who in the hell would want to live here? And I'm still here 54 years later. And
that's so right.
Then I got drafted by them. Go ahead.
So let's move from, so you got drafted in the 16th round. Tell me, if you can remember, your first experience walking into the Pittsburgh Steelers locker room or your first interaction with the players.
Well, you know, I can tell you another story too, which was that we reported here down at the Roosevelt Hotel, and that's where the Steelers' headquarters were. And so the rookies, or the draft choices at that time, the rookies were in, and we had to go through a physical before we headed up to training camp. And so I couldn't find the hotel at all. I knew it was on the corner of 6th and Penn in Pittsburgh. Well, we didn't have GPS at that time, and Pittsburgh's built on a triangle, so no streets run perpendicular to one another. So like 6th Street ran into 9th Street. And so then I go, okay, 5th runs into 4th, and all of a sudden was late at night, and I found the hotel. I don't know how. Pulled into a parking garage, and here's my story: is that the next day we go through our physical, and we're heading up, and my car was broken into, and everything I had was stolen.
Oh, geez. Welcome to Pittsburgh, right?
Because, yeah, that's right. Welcome to Pittsburgh. All I had was the clothes on my back. And it took everything. Now, I had packed, when you're the 16th round draft choice, I had packed just in case if I did make the team at that time. Then I was heading down to Florida. So I had my golf clubs in there. I had everything. Oh. Everything I owned at the age of 22 was in the trunk of my car. So that was my... Hey, welcome to Pittsburgh. At that time, so I can remember. Yeah, so I remember going, being up in training camp, and those rookies to begin with, you know, you just kind of, you know, you've been to training camps before. Nobody, you know, I didn't know anybody else there, and then the veterans came in a couple weeks later, and. And so that was my first experience. They're bigger. They had an attitude about themselves, so you're just a rookie trying to make the team. So here is another one of my experiences, which was that when the veterans came in, one of the veterans came in. One of the things they did was take the rooks out, or the rookie. Actually, the first round draft pick. Was a guy by the name of Mike Taylor out of Southern Cal. And they go, okay, hey, Mike, you know, part of the team is we're going to go down to the 19th hole after practice, you know, and get a chance to meet all the other players, you know, and have a couple beers. That's the deal. Well, Mike goes, oh, I don't drink. I don't go. I'm not going with you. Oh, okay. So then they went to Ernie Ruppel, who was the second round draft choice. they said, Ernie, you're going to come with us, a big farm boy out of Arkansas. And Ernie goes, oh, I'm not going either. Now I got stood up by the first and the second round draft choice. And Paul Martha, who was the instigator of this whole thing, was an All-American at the University of Pittsburgh, was the Steelers' number one draft pick, and was a defensive back for them, turns to me in the panic and said, okay, Blair, you're coming with us. And like a little lapdog, I go, oh, okay, fine. I just want to be accepted to be a part of it. And so we went and had a beer or two or three. Actually, I ended up having like 10 beers in an hour.
Oh, geez.
Everybody was like, come on, kid, you know, just. So that was my introduction to the veterans, as they say.
Whatever it takes to make the team, right?
That's right. Whatever it takes. My experience at that time.
This is a Legacy Heating and Air Game Day show for the Georgia Tech game later today, right here on WSET at 3:30 p.m. We're talking to the Purple Heart Brown Star winner in national championship and Super Bowl championship running back. There's so many different things on here, Rock, and there's a lot of other awards you've got over the years, too. But we don't have time to go through all of them. You're a very awarded person, and deservedly so. So let's go to probably not your greatest memory, but you got drafted then, you know, after you were in the Pittsburgh Steelers and you went to Vietnam. Any thoughts on that? How where were you when you received that news?
Well, we practiced at Pitt, so we were in the locker room at the time, and so this was at the latter part of November. And as the story goes, you know, one of the equipment guys hollers, hey, Blair, there's a letter over here for you in the pile of mail that is deposited for all the players, usually on a card table or a table that's there. And so it was a place I'd never It was a place I had never visited from that first day of training camp up through the 10th game. Not when you're the 417th person picked on a playing on a losing team, nobody knows you exist. As I tell people, my mother never even sent me a letter. And so here's my first letter. And I got up very quickly and I walked over and I cruised through it, opened it up, and they said, "Greetings. We'd like to inform you that you've been inducted into the Armed Services." And it was my draft notification. The thing that hit me was to report the next morning at 7 a.m. at the AFI station to be inducted. I go, the next morning? This was like a Wednesday that was to be on Thursday. Don't they give you a warning? I mean, don't they give you like a week or something, you know, to get ready for this? And it was post-dated a week before. By the time it found its way to that table and at Fort Pitt, it was the next morning. Oh, my heart was beating. I didn't know what to do, you know. So anyway, we end up going down there just because of the circumstances. They gave me an extra day to get my stuff together, and then boom, off you went. And to some degree, it probably was a blessing because it happened so quickly. You didn't get a chance to have to worry about it. You just reacted as we react to situations. You know, it was boom. And so then it's a whole new life. You're in basic training, advanced infantry training. You go through that process. You get yelled at. It wasn't any different than any training camp I've ever gone through, or, you know, but especially when you're a freshman, or a rookie, you know, you go through that whole uncertainty of what is going to take place. And I find myself in Vietnam, like thousands of other young soldiers and young men during that period of time. And really wasn't until 4.5 months later in country when we were on a mission and ran into enemy activity. We were to retrieve bodies that we had left behind 2 days previously, and we walked down an open rice paddy. We knew the enemy was in the area, and we had a point man who then saw movement across the berm, and in his excitement, hollered, "Goop, goop," shots broke the stillness. They started to run. He started chasing, pulling everybody out in the middle of that rice paddy, and the machine guns started to level the area. Bodies were diving left and right, crawling their hands and knees. My responsibility, since I was a grenadier, to get firepower on that machine gun position, maybe 150, 200 yards away. And I rolled over my side, and that's when I got hit the first time. And then we were in a firefight, dropped back. They probed our perimeter, got close enough. The a hand grenade came flying in. And hit my commanding officer on the back, bounced off, and rolled between my feet. Before I could jump out of the way, it blew up through my right foot and thigh and legs. And so, and then we were another firefight until we, sister company, got there and dragged us out of there. So that was the action that had taken place. And again, everything happened so quickly, as it usually does, no matter what accident happens, or in this case, that situation. And then we finally got out of there throughout the evening, carried us back to the secured area, and put on a helicopter and then flew to Da Nang, where I got patched up, and then flew to Tokyo, where I spent 3 weeks in the hospital, and then came back to the States, where I spent 9 months in the hospital and went through three operations during that period of time. So that was kind of that experience that I had gone through, and especially in the realms of Veterans Day coming up, and a special salute to all those who have served our country, and I thank them for that service. It wasn't necessarily a popular war, as we well know, coming out of Vietnam, the young soldier was attached to the war, and because it was so bittered by the population here. The military personnel was not appreciated. As a matter of fact, when they were spat upon and thought lowly of, and baby killers, and so most of the soldiers that came back had to repress that whole feeling. I mean, they had to repress it, come back and be kind of underground and go on with their lives and go back to school, whatever that situation may be. And so eventually, worked their way through it and lived through that that period of time. So today, we have an all-volunteer army that the American people thank, and they do so much for our government, for us, and protecting us worldwide. And so it's the least that we can do, especially as we approach Veterans Day, to be able to thank a veteran for giving us the freedoms and that we have today.
Unbelievable. So, Rock, you just last year went back to Vietnam, and I saw that story on ESPN, and obviously very emotional for you. Had you been wanting to do that, go back to Vietnam? And
well, it was an interesting, if I may say, it was an interesting story because it took us 10 years to get there. And it was an idea that was presented early on, and then it didn't work out. Schedules didn't work out, timing didn't work out, and then you forget, and then you come back, and it's a story. Eventually, all the pieces fell in, and it was for the 50th anniversary. And when ESPN asked me, said, "Well, would you like to go back?" And I said, "Yeah, yes, of course. Do I need to go back? I mean, from a personal point of view, no. Because of the fact that, unlike the majority of returning veterans during that period of time, who, as I said before, had to repress their feelings, I come back to a, quote, high-profile industry. I'm, a young soldier coming back to try to play football again. So I became a story. And in so becoming that story, there was somewhat of a catharsis. I had to answer all the questions that had would take place. How do you feel about the war? What's your, how can you compare it to playing sports? Blah, and go on and on and on and on and on. So for part of me, being able to express and tell that story and get some positive feedback that, well, here's a young man that's going through this, difficult time and so on, it gave me a catharsis to get rid of whatever feelings I was inside. So I said, okay, we can go back. I don't know what to expect. I mean, from you guys, I don't know what you expect from this. We'll go back. So we did, and then we're out in the race paddock, and Tom Rinaldi, who was asking questions, so as we were going through this process of where we were, so we asked the question, how do you feel? Wow. I mean, I have to tell you this, out of the blue, out of nowhere came this emotional feeling that you saw within that clip. I mean, part of me is overtaken by the emotion. There's a part of my brain that's going, where's this coming from? Where's this coming from? I mean, where's this emotion? And then I break down. I mean, it was interesting as I look back on it, because it came from the soles of my feet all the way up through my body. It was just this emotional thing that was a draining. I mean, it was like my whole system was being flushed on. It just didn't feel well. And I was crying, and I couldn't figure out why. And so we go, and Tom says, come on, let's go back. And I'm trying to reignite the story again, and we sit down, and he said, why don't you just sit down here for a second and get yourself together? And I said, okay. And I passed.
Those of us, it's hard to relate to everything that you went through there. Vince, I'm sorry I cut you off there. Go ahead.
That's what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was it, and I come to, and as I told Rinaldi afterwards, when I come to, I see these, there are five guys that are looking at me like, holy cripe sakes, what happened? Did he die, or, and so I go, as the true Rinaldi would do is, are you all right? Are you all right?
Wow.
Yes. Are you all right? Hey, keep the cameras rolling. Okay. Are you all right? Make sure you get this shot. Okay. Are you all right? So, I kid him about that. But,
yeah.
But anyway, and so that was, but it gave me, it just gave me an insight. It gave me an insight into our young military people today. And those who have suffered with post-traumatic stress syndrome over the years, you've heard that terminology, those that might have mental health problems because of their experiences, because all of a sudden, as I said before, you know, it's like, and it can happen at any time, like you open the front door, you walk out, and boom, you just walk off a cliff, and it can happen that quickly. And so it just gave me a little insight of how they have to deal with those situations in their life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know what? You know, here we go again. I think we're going to have a part three later in the year because you've got just such an interesting life. I'm being serious. I'm going to have to contact you. So for maybe in late November or December, if you're up for it, we got to get into your Pittsburgh Steelers days too yet.
Oh, we can do that. Sure, yeah. Just give me
all
any
right.
time, Jim. I know you. I mean, you got a great lineup today. I saw that lineup. So we got to get to make.
We got to keep the show moving. So in deference to them, I don't want to cut you off, but we're going to pick up the Pittsburgh Steelers saga next time we talk.
That's right. But anyway, just okay. One last quick story. But I know that you got to cut the game today against Georgia Tech. Last time I played against them, I played down at Georgia Tech. My senior year, it was a game. I scored two touchdowns. I scored two touchdowns in that game and ended up with a torn ligament. I had a torn ligament, and I scored two touchdowns. And it was
wow.
And then we flew home afterwards, and then Sunday we had a meeting. And I saw the doctors and they said, Blair can't play anymore. He tore his ligament in that game. And Eric goes, what?
You know,
if anybody
could do it, you'd be the one to do it, Brock.
That's right. Thanks for the time, guys. And have a great show.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks, Brock.
You have a great day. Stay with us.
All right,
we're back
thanks,
after
Tim.
A short break on Sports Radio 96.1 WSDT with Dick Vitale.
Back to Legacy Heating and Air's Game Day with Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.
Your Legacy Heating and Air Game Day show is brought to you by, of course, Legacy Heating and Air. Temperatures will soon be dropping, which means it's time to schedule your $89 preseason tune-up and safety inspection with Legacy Heating and Air. Ensure your family is safe and warm this season. Schedule service online at LegacyHeatingAndAirInc.com. By Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, contact Matt Wilson in South Bend or Pablo Rodriguez in Granger. By Fisher's Barbecue and Catering, visit their new location at 213 East McKinley Avenue in Mishawaka for drive-through, carry-out, or catering. Just look for the smoke. By Food Bank of Northern Indiana, not all heroes wear capes. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana reminds us all that we can play a role in ending hunger in our communities. Find out how at feedindiana.org. By Four Winds South Bend, escape the everyday. By Industrial Door of Northern Indiana, dedicated to providing the best in garage doors. Tim?
Vince, you there?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I am so sorry having these technical difficulties. Hey, Dickie, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Who am I on with?
You're on with Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario. I am so sorry. You know, we're having technical problems today, or more so just me than anybody else. But we're so glad to have you join us. And I know one of the things we're going to talk about a lot is your new book that just came out. And thank you for sending that to me. I've been reading it the last few days. It's called The Lost Season, a look at what the journey to the 2020 National Championships could have been. So being you're in, I think you're like 42nd year at ESPN, I only can imagine what the motivation was to write this book. But you tell me, what made you write the book, Dick?
Well, you know, first of all, we just was very depressed about the fact not having a tournament. the situation was, well, my life, I've been so excited about March Madness. We didn't have it. I'm sitting around talking to my buddies, and Dick Weiss is a great, great guy in the world of college sports, and we were talking, and Howie Schwab, research guru, and we said, you know what? Maybe I should do a book. It was like therapy. I thought it was like therapy. Sitting down, doing a book, and it's been gotten great reviews. It's been well received. And most of all, every dollar from the book, I'm giving the kids battling cancer to the V Foundation. So if the Notre Dame family wants to help me out, I hope they do, because I think they'll enjoy the book, number one. And number two, they'll be helping kids battling cancer. And all they got to do, if they want to help us in that area, they got to buy the book at DickVitale.com. DickVitale.com, where they can get an autographed copy. They write whatever they want me to write. They put it there. Notre Dame is awesome, baby. Notre Dame's the best. Whatever they want me to write, I write. And those dollars then will go to the V Foundation for kids battling cancer. So just have them go, Tim, to DickVitale.com.
DickVitale.com. And Dick, I know you've been really involved in this, and we talk about it every time, proudly talk about all your contributions. You've raised over $30 million in your gala. And how? So I would assume this year you could not have it with everything going on, or did you do a virtual one?
We had a virtual one the last one we had. We raised $7.4 million virtually,
wow,
which blew my mind. People have really responded. The WWE gave us $900,000. Mark Cuban came in with $500,000. It's just, you know, people that really been lucky in their life realize how really important it is to get research dollars to help kids. There's nothing worse. I have a youngster right now, lives near me. He's going in his fourth battle against brain cancer. If people go to my Diggy V on Twitter, I posted a thing all about him. His name is Weston Herman, 13 years old. Think about this, Tim. He's had two brain surgeries. He's in his fourth battle with brain cancer right now. And I want to give you a story about courage. This kid is a terrific, not good, a terrific hockey player. 13 years old, plays in the older league with high school kids, 15, 16, 17. The other day, he does chemotherapy. He has to go down in this battle, 52 weeks of chemo. He has chemo, finishes at 3:30. Comes home, and he starts throwing up all over his front yard. He tells his father, "They're going to stop me. I'm playing tonight hockey." So you can't play. Just think, keep playing. And he played. And I put a video up on my Twitter /TV showing him in that game scoring a goal. He scored 4 goals, 3 assists. The courage to come out of chemo. But what the families go through, the pain the moms and dads go through, is amazing. So that's why I'm begging people out there. You know, our next gala, May 7th, is going to be our 16th year. One of our honored guests is going to be Muffet McGraw, Notre Dame superstar. Notre Dame, beautiful, beautiful person in every way possible, coaching and just in life. Represented the university as a coach in such a positive way. I think Coach Ivy is going to continue that great, great tradition. But Muffet will be one of our honored guests, along with the football coach of Florida, University of Florida, Dan Mullen, and we're going to have just a great time. It's going to be a super, super event again. We hope to raise millions and millions of dollars.
I tell you what, Dick, that was both Tim and I both have 13-year-olds, and that is an amazing story. I can't even imagine what that family has to go through, so thanks for bringing that to our attention. I wanted to ask you, and this is kind of relates to your book, what it was like last year when the middle of March hits and you're sitting at home, not at a March Madness game. I can't even imagine what that was. I mean, it was tough for all of us, but I can't imagine what that was like for you.
You know, an empty feeling, obviously, but when you sit back and think about it, they did the right thing, the NCAA, because number one, the priority has to be the safety of everybody involved. You know, sports is great, but this pandemic is out of control. You know, I just was out last night and I did a Periscope, and I showed where I was at. You know, at a restaurant that I was at down a beautiful Siesta Key down here, people walking around, hardly anybody with a mask on, social distancing, forget about it, didn't even think about it, the people, and it just blows my mind. I just don't understand and can't comprehend how people do not listen to the experts out there who know what this is about, who deal with it, and it's running rampant. Over 90,000 yesterday were confirmed with it. And then we got people say, oh, it's nothing. It's not really, it's nothing. nothing. Tell that to the 230,000 people that died. Tell them that's nothing. I mean, it's sad. It really is sad. And the other thing sad in our nation is we don't have enough love, man. We don't have enough people loving one another. I grew up in a great family. My mother and father were uneducated. Fifth grade education. I had a doctor of love. And they taught my brother, sister, and I in this great country. I used to hear from my mom and dad. I miss them so much. They're Hall of Famers to me. They had a doctor of love, man. And they used to share with me all the time. His name, Dick, was Richie. Richie, treat people like you want to be treated. And if you do that, you'll be a happy guy. And then it'd say, be good to people, and people will be good to you. Well, if we did more, and if all of us, if everybody out there had that philosophy, treat people how you want to be treated, we wouldn't have all this division and hate and violence, all this nonsense going on. It just breaks my heart. It breaks my heart about the pandemic, how serious it is. You know, we worry about losing basketball games. Oh, football game, this guy might not play, he's tested. Oh, really? That's really great. And that's so important. What about, for example, the millions that are out of work and can't provide for their family because of this disease? I mean, this is something we can't just sit back and accept it. We got to do something about it. What we got to do is follow, wear a mask, social distance, do the things they tell you to do.
Oh, so
you got me fired up, man.
Yeah, I know. You know, speaking of fired up, and probably not appropriately with what you're just talking about, you were fired up when the Tampa Bay, your own Tampa Bay Rays, made it into the playoffs. You were just so excited. They were in the World Series, I mean.
Well, now you got me really upset big time because, really, I was really frustrated beyond belief in that last game because I have great respect. I love what Kevin Cash has done with the Rays, got minimal 27th payroll in baseball. We don't have the dollars of the Dodgers and the Yankees and all them have, and yet we won the American League Championship, and he did a great job. But, boy, I went ballistic. I'm not second-guessing. I did it right away on my Twitter. If you go to Dickie V, you'll see my Twitter line. Before all the damage started, I said, no, don't take Blake Snell out. Don't take him out. He was dominant. I've been a season ticket holder for 21 years. My seats are first row next to the visitor's dugout. 2018, I watched Blake Snell, as he was winning the Cy Young Award, just dominate hitters. And we had not seen that the last year or so because he's been injured. He's had some arm problems. But in that game against the Dodgers, that was the Blake Snell of 2018. And anybody could see that. You don't have to be a genius to see that. He was dominating. He took the four top batters in that lineup that were coming up when he was yanked. They were coming up. They got up eight times. They struck out seven times. I couldn't believe it took them out. But they go to analytics, and analytics has told them the third time around, we don't want you to face them because they're going to be familiar with you the whole bit, so we're going to make a change. Sometimes you got to forget that analytics. I know years ago, man, you're not going to the mound to get Bob Gibson or Tom Seaver to throw the manager back to the dugout. I mean, it just tore my heart because the other thing is our bats were anemic. We couldn't hit in that game, and we couldn't hit during the series. We struggled hitting the baseball, other than Randy Arozarena, the rookie that came on like an incredible player. But the bottom line is, only way we were going to win that game was possibly with a shutout. And he was heading in that direction. He threw 70 pitches. Well, you're getting fired up on a lot of issues.
I know, you can relax today.
I'm going to relax, take it easy, watch the Irish later. And now you got me all these issues fired up.
Well, let me continue your fired up attitude right now and get one more plug for the lost season.
Well, the lost season to me, you know, was one that we have a fantasy draw at the end, and in that draw we pick what we think each game, and we have guys who fantasize who would score and not score. But I'm looking forward to this year. I hope that, and remember this again, I can't emphasize this enough, because I want to raise as many dollars for kids battling cancer. Please go to DickVitale.com. You can make donations there to the V Foundation. You can buy some of my merchandise, signature hats, PTP basketballs, primetime performer on it, awesome baby on them. You can buy them. You can buy my signature hats. You can buy a number of books I have, children's book, motivational book, this latest book, The Lost Season. You just go to DickVitale.com. WrestleVitality.com. It's all right there in front of you, and you get autographed copies, and every dollar goes to the Reef Foundation for Kids Battling Cancer. By the way, my granddaughter is up there at Notre Dame. She's a freshman. She's right now on a tennis team. Loves it, getting ready for final exams, and then she'll be coming home for a while because they have that break, I guess, like November, I think, 21st. Hey, my heart wants to go out also to the families of those two youngsters that lost their lives in that unbelievable situation. Oh, my God, my granddaughter went to, I guess, the service they had, and so sad, so sad.
Yes, it is. It is. It is very, very, very sad. But we appreciate all the work that you do to brighten up people's lives through your foundation work. Every time we talk, whenever I look at this picture of dealing with these young people, like Ben said, you know, I've got four daughters. My youngest is 13. Like Ben said, what kids have to go through, they shouldn't. And I know your foundation is working to help eliminate that. And God bless you for doing that. And we'll talk to you next year.
Okay, Tim, let me tell you this, you and Vince as well. If you guys think you have it tough or somebody thinks they have a little tough day today, think about this. 45 to 50 mothers and fathers today and every day, go home and hear four words no mom and dad ever wants to hear. Your child has cancer. So, again, let's thank God for our blessings. Make every day the most important day in our lives. Live it to our fullest. Have passion and pride about what you do. My God, Notre Dame is such a great school. We got 7 degrees in my family from Notre Dame. Cindy, who's now a freshman, will be the 8th. My other grandson, her brother, he committed to Notre Dame and will be going there to play lacrosse in 2022. So the school is very important. My daughter Terry was the president of the Monogram Club. She's still on the board of directors. I just can't say enough about the university. We have my wife and I gave a big endowment there, and we love doing it because it helps kids. And I just think the university represents everything I believe in. It's such a beautiful place.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that, Dick. And go Irish today against Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, Irish. Want to hear it? 37 and Georgia Tech 21. We want Clemson, and they better come in with Trevor Lawrence too. We want him to be playing.
You're right.
That's right.
All right. Talk to you later, Dick. Thank you very much.
Take care, guys.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Bye bye. We'll be right back with the real Rudy. Rudy. How about just Rudy right now? We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Legacy Heating and Air's Game Day with Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.
And the Heating and Air Game Show is brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. Temperatures will soon be dropping, which means it's time to schedule your $89 preseason tune-up and safety inspection with Legacy Heating and Air. Ensure your family is safe and warm this season. Schedule service online at Legacy Heating and Air, Inc., .com. Also brought to you by Irish Realty, Steve Smith team. When buying or selling a home, to building and remodeling, go Irish, Irish Realty. By Lechleitner Door, they open all the right doors. By Monterey Mexican Grill, authentic Mexicans serve fresh daily at McKinley and Division in Mishawaka, MontereyMexican.com. By South Bend Orthopedics, team physicians for the University of Notre Dame since 1949. By Tim Growl State Farm Insurance, get a trusted, familiar name as your good neighbor agent. Call Tim at 232-9981. And by Budweiser. Budweiser locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Football fans, this Bud's for you. Tim?
How about this? Can you hear me now?
I absolutely can hear you now, and that is so good to hear.
Oh, thank you. So
I don't know what you did, but
guided
sir.
Me through it. I don't know what actually got on the technology. I'm an old man. You'd think I'd know technology. Like Rocky did a better job than me. Anyway, later today at 3:30 p.m., the Fighting Irish will take on the Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech right here on WSBT. It's going to be about 52, 54 degrees. I think that's 3 weeks in a row that I've said the temperature at game time is going to be about that temperature.
Yeah.
But here's somebody that stirs up the temperature every time I watch Rudy, which is at least a few times a year, is the original and the one and only Rudy Rudiger. Rudy, good morning.
Hey, it's good. It's good. Just finished my workout, and I feel good. And hey, here we are, ready for the Georgia Tech game. I'm excited.
Well, so tell me what's been going on lately? What have been doing? I know you go around and do motivational speaking. Is Vegas where you live, or were you there for a talk?
Las Vegas is where I live, and it's kind of, you go to Zoom now. Zoom is the magic number here. We do a lot of Zoom calls with companies and universities, and we even do military across the world. So I'm really excited about that, the new technology that we're now dealing with.
Yeah, you didn't. I hope you had a better time when you first started doing it than I've had today with it.
I know. We're supposed to do a Zoom, but I guess we're not.
No, yeah, we just, like I said, things happen and stuff, but we still get to talk to you and everything.
That's right.
So take us back, you know, a little bit. Because we had a recent anniversary for the movie, Rudy. So it's amazing how much impact a movie can still have, you know, decades later. Are you surprised at all by that?
Well, you know, you never know how the message will hit America or, you know, movie fans or kids today. But the message does really hit hard today. And it's a good message of, you know, if you work hard and stick to your guns, and get better each day, and don't judge, just move forward, and you know, release this hate. That's what it is. It's releasing the hate, and boy, your whole attitude becomes very positive, and you look at things differently, and you deal with the issues as they come. You don't create the problems. You take care of them as they come. And I think I learned that in the military when I was in the Navy. That's where I learned to adjust my attitude in a big way, because life is not going to happen in the process you think it's going to happen every day. You got to change course. You have to adapt to the process, but you never change the goal. So that was important for me. Just like with Notre Dame football, I had to go to practice every day. The process changed every day. You know, Coach Parseason leaves. New coach comes in, you got to do it all over again. I'm 27 years of age, and it's 27 years since the movie was out. Is that cool? So it's all kind of there, and it was 27 seconds left in the game when I actually got in the game. So saying all that, whatever that number means, Notre Dame's going to have a great day today.
Rudy, I wanted to ask you a two-part question, really. Number one, you know, how were you able, because I know it was kind of a one-man show as far as to getting this movie made and getting it done, and kind of go through that a little bit. And then also, what were you a part of the decision, or how was it explained to you to keep out the fact that you were in the Navy? That part never even comes up in the movie, and I think that's a pretty cool part of your life.
Well, it is, but we didn't want a lot of victory, because that was a big victory in my life, and we wanted to show the message more than what actually, it was not a documentary, number one. But the movie, you know what's great about Angelo Pizzo, David Anzbar, and the team, once I found the team, they kept the integrity of the journey. They never got off track on that. But we had to do composites and embellishments to make the movie tight and make it work. But we stuck to that message. And if you watch Rudy, you don't have to be a religious guy, but it's very biblical, the movie. If you read your scriptures, you could see a scripture in the whole movie. So it's really cool. I think that's why the movie works, because it crosses all barriers of all religions, all politics, all races. It hits everybody. So that's why this movie sticks.
We're with Rudy Rudiger on the Legacy Heating and Air Game Day show right here on WSBT. How much were you involved? Were you on the set all the time with them, or give us our listeners a little flavor
of that? Well, first of all, it took 10 years to find the team to do Rudy. I was in and out of South Bend, finally came to South Bend for the last 6 years, got a job in South Bend. Then got fired from my job when I kept going out to California. And finally, we had a final meeting with Notre Dame. And they very nicely, very, very professionally came in and said, "We love Rudy, but the answer is no. We're not going to do a movie about this university. We have our movie, Newt Rockne, All-American." Well, I understood that. I totally understood it. So I had to have a little more patience with the decision makers, because they're not quite getting the message yet. So I had to kind of set back take a step back and rethink this whole thing. And then I ended up getting the movie made through many different serendipities of life. I don't know how to explain that, but there's no right way or wrong way of getting a decision. And it's just being bold and timing and telling the truth, and then it works.
Yeah, I can only imagine. We're fortunate enough a number of years ago that Sean Astin actually came over to game day over there at Ivy Court. You remember those days because you came over to Ivy Court too a number of times. And he spoke very highly of the interaction that you two had and everything. Can you even imagine as a kid that you were going to end up and have a famous movie out there and rub elbows with people?
No, I never thought I would rub elbows with Mikey from Goonies, you know? And you think of that. Yeah, and you think of that Encino Man. But here's the movie that attracted me, the big one. My dad was in World War II. He was a B-17 turret gunner. And Sean was in the movie Memphis Belle.
Memphis Belle, that's right.
Yeah, he was a torque gunner. And boy, that was it. I saw that. And that is Rudy. That's the guy who's going to play Rudy. But then we had to really, really sell Sean to, you know, the casting directors and, you know, David and Angelo. But they bought into Sean the minute they saw him. And the minute he walked in, we were in Chicago, by the way, at the Northwestern Notre Dame game after I convinced we got to see Sean. Astin, and they said, okay, we'll bring him in. They brought him in. We're sitting in a hotel waiting for Sean. He comes in. I have my hat on backwards, and Sean walks in with his hat on backwards, and David looked at me, and he looked at him. He said, that's Rudy. That's Rudy. And that was it. That's how he got the part. But more importantly, Sean was really Sean Astin in that movie. He didn't have to play much because he was dealing with all the struggle he's been through and that hardship and the setbacks he had as a actor and as a son to Patty Duke, who he went through a lot as well with his mother and his family. So he understood all the struggle and all the pain, and he's never gone to college yet. After he got out of shooting the movie, he went back to a junior college in L.A. and graduated from UCLA. But that, to me, is awesome. And he was a little older like I was when he did that. So Sean Astin is, if he's a model of anything, he's a model of perseverance as well.
Well, which is exactly what you've proved, and you still prove that, and you talk about that in all your speeches to everybody. And we appreciate you taking the time at the last minute to come on with us.
No, Tim, I'm honored, man. I'm honored to talk to anybody associated with the university. And I love Notre Dame, and it's just great to walk on campus and knowing that you're part of that university. And hopefully people will see the message of the movie, especially in South Bend, and people who are, did that happen? Did this happen? It doesn't matter what happened. It matters that you get the message of the movie. That's the power. And God bless you guys. Have a great one.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks, Rudy.
Take care. We'll be right back on the Legacy Heating and Air Game Day Show with former Notre Dame quarterback Rick Meyer, Notre Team Dr. Brian Radigan, and Ted Griddell.
Our Notre Dame football Saturday continues with Game Day, brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. Now your hosts, Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.
Welcome back to the second hour of Game Day. Glad you are with us with Matt Embry, producing back in the WSBT studios, and Vince and I are still sequestered in our man cave secret locations. We're less than 4.5 hours away from the kickoff right here on WSBT, and you can just stay right here all day long, whether you're streaming it on the app until the game time, because once the game comes, Notre Dame takes control of that, and you'll have to find that on regular channel and stuff. But right after us will be Darren Pritchett and Sean Stires with Game Day Sports Beat, and then after the game, the post-game show with Sean Stires and Reggie Brooks. I listen to it every week, and they are going to go over all the game stats, all the interviews, and review the game. And we're all going to be thinking here that it's going to be a win again, so it's still good to hear those statistics and those conversations and stuff, too. All right here on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT. So we're going to get started right away with our segment, Who Are You? Also with us on our Who Are You segment is the publisher of Irish Breakdown, and I think he's in Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken, but we'll find out real sure. Good morning, Brian Driscoll.
Good morning. Yes, I am in Atlanta.
You are in Atlanta. When did you get there?
Got in last night. It was a weird day of travel, but got in, and now I'm ready to go.
So have you ever been at that stadium before to cover a game?
I have not. I've been to Atlanta a lot of times, but I've never been to Georgia Tech's campus and never been in Bobby Dodd Stadium.
What would you relate it to? Any other campus?
No, I've never been. I this will be my first time. So,
so you haven't
I'll let you know.
Yeah, he hasn't even been. He's still probably in the hotel since the game isn't.
Well, because of the COVID stuff, we're not allowed in this press box until 2 hours before kickoff. So I won't be heading up there just yet.
Wow, that's interesting. I did not know that. All right, so let's get started here. First of all, and I know we might already have some answers to this question because I did it a couple days ago and before the final roster came out. Who's the person offensively on the Notre Dame sideline that hasn't played yet or not very much that you wish you see on the field more?
I know where Brian's going with this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the two freshmen. You pick one, Xavier Watts and Jordan Johnson. I think Notre Dame's wide receiver core needs a boost in playmaking ability now that Kevin Austin is out and Braden Lindsey's out for at least two more weeks. And I think both of those young men can provide that. And so, you know, that's the missing link in this football team right now, right? I mean, your running back situation is very strong. Your offensive line's playing at a high level. Your tight ends are playing at a high level. Your receiving core needs to play better. And I think the players that we've seen are good complementary players, but they need playmakers. And right now I think their two best playmakers are two freshmen that the staff refuses to work into the rotation because they don't have the playbook mastered like a senior yet.
Well, and I think the biggest problem for me with that whole scenario is the fact that it's not like the guys that are on the field are, you know, killing it, right? I mean, they're you're right. They're complementary players. They're good players. There's nothing against what they can do, but they need another element in that wide receiving core. And due to injuries to Braden Lindsey and Kevin Austin, they're lacking that playmaking ability. And look, Ben Skowronek made two nice catches in traffic and was able to turn them into touchdowns. That was a great performance. There's no question about it. But can he repeat that on a regular basis? Is he going to be able to take the top off of a defense? No, that's not what he does. And so, you know, I don't understand, to be perfectly honest, what the hesitation is in getting these young playmaking types. I mean, that was one heck of a wide receiving class that came in, and there's three guys, Jay Brunell included, to the two guys that you mentioned. Those three guys are dynamic. They can make plays, and as a coaching staff, it's your responsibility to make sure that those guys get on the field and that those guys are showcased to do what they can do at this point, right? I mean, we saw Pittsburgh, the Addison kid. He's a true freshman. He's their leading receiver. I guarantee you if you gave him a quiz over the entire playbook, he would fail, okay? But they're putting him in position to do what he does best, and he's excelling.
All right. Conversely, same question, but on defense. Brian?
You know, honestly, I think for me, there's not one player that I necessarily think that we need to see. I think the defense has done a phenomenal job of getting a lot of guys in the game, and I think because of the injuries and some of the guys that have missed games for other reasons, they've played just about everybody they have on the defensive roster at this point in time. So I will say it, I will take it this way. I still believe that Houston Griffith is a guy that needs to step up. I think he's a guy we haven't seen a lot of this year for different reasons, and they need him to play better because they're going to need a third safety that can make plays at some point in time this season, and Houston Griffith is a guy that can be that kind of player.
Yeah, he's exciting. When he's on, he's on. And he's a guy that I would love to see get more playing time. I'll stick to the old reliable. I'll go with Jack Kaiser. I think, you know, we've seen him play, but since that South Florida game, we haven't seen him play in bunches. And I would love to see him get an opportunity to be out there for more than a couple of plays to really, you know, be able to flex his muscle a little bit, get comfortable, not press, because he knows he's only going to be in there for a few plays. You know, there's a different mentality when you know you're going to have a whole series or a whole few series where you can get comfortable and then you could just play. When you're only in there for a couple of plays, it's different. You have a different mentality. You kind of press a little bit. You know, I got to make a play so that I can get more plays, and you end up making some mistakes. So I would like to see Jack Kaiser out at the buck a little bit more often because, look, of all the positions on the defense, because as a whole they've been playing very, very well, I don't think the buck is nailed down yet. There's still some question marks at that position. So I would love to see Jack get a few more reps.
This is the Legacy Heating Air Game Day Show on WSBT. We're in our Who Are You segment, talking with the publisher of Irish Breakdown, Brian Driscoll, and Irish Breakdown's football analyst, our own Vince. So next question, who is Michael Mayer? Is he Baby Gronk, Magic Mike, or a new Kyle Rudolph or Tyler Eifert?
You know, I think he's the first Michael Mayer. You know, I think that you know, comparisons like that are fun for fans, but for me, it's about he has a skill set that I think is very unique. I think that he is far more advanced physically than Kyle Rudolph and Tyler Eifert were as true freshmen. I think he's a more dynamic athlete than Cole Kmet, for example. And, you know, I just think he's an outstanding player that if he continues to progress, if he continues to put in the work, that has a chance to be an all-time great at a position where you got to be pretty darn good to be an all-time great. So, you know, I think that, you know, someday we're going to be talking about comparing tight ends that signed with Notre Dame to Michael Mayer. Whereas right now we kind of compare him more to Tyler Eifert and Kyle Rudolph. So he's a tremendous, tremendous talent. He's why you're seeing now why I ranked him as the best tight end in the class of 2020.
Well, he's special. I mean, there's no way, no two ways about it. And Notre Dame fans better enjoy, I'm guessing, the 3 years that they're going to have with him, because if he is around for a fourth year, I would be shocked and very excited, frankly. But look, he, just based on playing time alone, he's more advanced than the guys that Brian mentioned. I mean, it is rare that position, because you have to be an inline blocker at tight end, and to be that physically mature when you get to college right out of high school is crazy. I mean, that just doesn't happen. And he looks like a grown man. And I realize 18, you're technically a man, but I've seen plenty of 18-year-olds that do not qualify physically. And he's playing big boy football as a true freshman, and he clearly has an understanding of how to play the game, and he has an understanding of this offense, and he, you know, he has some work to do as a blocker, don't get me wrong, but he sticks his nose in, and he's physical, and he obviously has really good hands, and he's a focal point of this offense, and it's really fun to watch.
All right. No, who are you question. Brian, in a minute, give me your analysis of what we're going to see today.
You know, I think we're going to see Notre Dame really catch fire. I think last week was a great opportunity for the Notre Dame offense to finally kind of kick off the shackles. We saw the return of the RPOs. We saw the run game really compete. And I feel like offensively, after having to face Pitt last week, this is going to seem like a really easy test. You know, it's like when, you know, you're getting ready to go to to bat in baseball, and you swing that heavy warm up bat, and then all of a sudden you pick up your normal bat, and it just feels a lot lighter. That's kind of how the Georgia Tech defense is going to feel today. I think for me, it's just about building momentum going into next week. I think Notre Dame offensively needs to come out, and they need to be aggressive. They need to attack, and they need to continue building confidence in the players that they're going to need to step up and beat Clemson next week. So I'd like to see Chris Tyree be more involved. I'd like to see the ball spread around a little bit, and I'd really like to see Ian Book continue that playmaker type of mentality that we saw from him last week.
Brian, can I just say that I really appreciate the baseball analogy?
That was for you, Vince.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But no, I agree with everything that Brian said. I just really think that Notre Dame's going to go out and they're going to impose their will on the ground offensively. Look for Kyren Williams, Chris Tyree. I mean, they might go down deep into the depth chart at running back. This Georgia Tech team cannot stop Notre Dame's run game. They just can't. And Notre Dame would be foolish not to exploit that advantage. And so I do really think that they're going to come out and just hammer Georgia Tech on the ground. And then they're going to use play action to their benefit in the pass game. And frankly, they're going to be able to do offensively whatever they want. And so it will definitely have a look towards the future and what they want to do against Clemson. Because, look, all the press for Clemson has been about, Lawrence and testing positive and will he play against Notre Dame. Well, guess what? That defense is intact, okay? Mm-hmm. And they're really good. And so Notre Dame's offense is going to have to be on point next week if they want to put a dent into that Clemson defense. So they're going to have their eyes looking forward just a little bit. And as far as the Notre Dame defense is concerned, they're going to keep doing what they're doing. They're going to be just as powerful, just as strong as they have been the last few weeks. This Georgia Tech offense does provide a little bit more of an explosive nature with the quarterback and the running back, and they're both true freshmen, Gibbs and Sims. But Notre Dame's defense will shut them down. But look for them to score a few more points than Pitt did. No question about that, in my opinion. But Notre Dame's going to dominate this game from start to finish, and it should be a fun one if you're an Irish fan.
Well, let's hope that everything works out just the way you guys
It say. Should.
It should? All right.
It should.
That's good enough for me. Well, Brian, tell our listeners how to get more info involved with Irish Breakdown.
You go to www.irishbreakdown.com. Definitely want to check it out. We have a recap on our site right now of all the week's analysis, which includes all the written content, talking about matchups. Our podcast is linked in there that Vince and I do together, where we preview the Georgia Tech game. And, of course, on the front page now is the analysis of former Notre Dame quarterback Steve Beuerlein, who broke down the Pitt game and then also previewed what he expects to see today from the Notre Dame-Georgia Tech matchup. So that's irishbreakdown.com.
Irishbreakdown.com. Looking forward to joining you next week. You have a great week and a great game today.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Thanks, Brian.
And that's our segment, Who Are You? So let's go to a break, and then we're going to come back with former kicker Ted Gradel and with the team in Atlanta, Dr. Brian Radigan on WSBT, your sports radio station.
Back to Legacy Heating and Air's Game Day with Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.
Our Game Day show is brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. Temperatures will soon be dropping, which means it's time to schedule your $89 preseason tune-up and safety inspection with Legacy Heating and Air. Ensure your family is safe and warm this season. Schedule your service at LegacyHeatingAndAirInc.com. We're also brought to you by Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing. Contact Matt Wilson in South Bend or Pablo Rodriguez in Granger. Fisher's Barbecue and Catering. Visit their new location at 213 East McKinley Avenue in Mishawaka for drive-through, carry-out, or catering. Just look for the smoke. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Not all heroes wear capes. The Food Bank of Northern Indiana reminds us all that we can play a role in ending hunger in our communities. Find out how at feedindiana.org. By Four Winds South Bend, escape the everyday. And by Industrial Door of Northern Indiana, dedicated to providing the best in garage doors. Tim?
Thank you, Vince. This is the Legacy Heating Air Game Day show. It's going to be about 52, 54 degrees down there in Atlanta for the game later today right here on WSBT. Our next guests are involved with the Holtz's Heroes Foundation. And as our consistent listeners do know, we've been trying to feature each and every game some representative from that organization because they do such a good job. They're all former players. So not only do we get to talk about the HHF Foundation, but we get to talk about football. So welcoming us to this segment is a kicker from the 1980s, Ted Gradel, and also Dr. Brian Radigan. I think, Brian, are you with the team in Atlanta?
We are. Yep, down here now.
All right. How's things down there? Let's check in real quick with you. What's everything going to be a good day down there? Sunshine and everything?
Yeah, it is. It's weather's perfect, and everybody's doing great down here.
Good.
No issues.
Good. All right. Ted, let's start with the Holtz's Heroes Foundation. Tell me about your involvement with that.
Thanks, Tim and Vince. Appreciate having me on. And we were formerly known as Lou's Lads, and it started out as the group of former players that were with Lou that wanted to get together on more of a regular basis, reconnect. So there was camaraderie around it, and it's grown from there. We rebranded to Holtz's Heroes because we feel like Coach Holtz does have that widely known name throughout the country and through our armed services and all that. So we've really tried to grow this in a way that allows us to take the leadership skills we've learned from Coach, the teamwork we've learned, and help make communities a better place. So we're broadening the efforts we're doing around that right now.
Dr. Brian, you were the one that really got me onto this because you were involved with them and you made the connection with Reggie Brooks and myself too. So what does the foundation mean to you?
Oh, it's a lot, but really you can kind of get a bunch of old players who obviously are very successful in their own right, no matter what they're doing. And just like Notre Dame on the whole, you got this culture of everything, whether you're business or medicine or whatever you're doing. There's people from all over the place that a lot of them happen to be old players. A few are trainers and managers. It's just it's a pretty impressive collection of different individuals. I'm certainly honored to be a part of it. And of course, it all stems from Coach Holtz, whether we're afraid to say no, which is kind of the way it was when we used to play. Always been afraid of that guy. or we just truly, you know, love to be a part of something special. And we've always felt that way. So this thing's just taken off. And the reason I reached out to you, Tim, was just because there are so many messages that can be made by this group of guys. And it's just important that, you know, hot topics like the racism and things going on in the world, they have a lot of messages that they can say. And I've been humbled multiple times on our current Zoom calls at what's being said by guys that you're really just a little bit speechless. And like I said, really humbled. And I just want the rest of the world to kind of get a chance to be a part of what I'm a part of and see what's out there and what special messages are there to be given to everybody. And if you can just change one person one at a time, and I've always said if we could create that locker room feeling, which is actually what his website is, if you can create that locker room feeling that I got to experience where – yeah, you learn to live and play with the guys from many cultures, many races, many everything. And then you just make it work. You know, they're not always your best friends from no matter who you're with, but you learn to play with them and some become your best friends. But it's a snapshot of what you kind of would like the whole world to be a little bit like that, right? And if they can do that a little bit through Holtz's Heroes, then we've done one good thing in the world, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's Dr. Brian Radigan, Chief Orthopedic Physician with the Fighting Irish. And we've also have with us Ted Grottle, kicker in the 80s right here on the Legacy Heating and Air Game Day show. Ted, when you and I were talking back and forth, emailing and texting back and forth, you were talking about you got to be there at the beginning when Holtz came and then got to see the success as it started. So what was the most impressive thing or what did you see that was the catalyst of that moving forward?
It was when Coach Holtz took over, we were a 5-6 team with Jerry Faust, 6-5, 5-6, those type of years. And he said to us, I'm going to show you what it takes to win. And it's about doing what's right, doing your best, and showing others you care. His three simple principles. But if you didn't pay attention to details, everybody had to be responsible and accountable for their work. Literally, the receptionist at the football office had to answer the phone a certain way that conveyed, we're trying to win a national championship. I mean, players had to pick up, Dr. Radigan mentioned the managers that are part of Holtz's Heroes now. I mean, you had to show respect for the people that were helping this program. Pick up your towels. Don't take a shower after practice and throw your towel on the ground. Put it away. Do the little things right. Big things take care of themselves, but you have to do the little things, lining up for winter workouts. If your feet weren't on the line, literally all heck would break loose. You know, it couldn't be a half inch behind. And that translated into, okay, we know we have a chance now. We're going to work harder in the weight room. We're going to work harder on our own because we're accountable to our teammates. We're part of a bigger goal here. So it's not about us as individuals, it's about what we do to contribute to help the team win. And so I thought that was a pretty neat eye-opening process.
Doc, you want to add anything to that?
Well, and that's why you get guys running for Congress from Coach Holt, right? I mean, people look for great things. It's true. And I got the benefit from all the things that Ted's group went through. Like, they went through even more hell than I had to, right? But it was all a good hell in a way that they set the tone for the rest of us. Like, wow, you really can follow his blueprint, and you're going to win. Either you're on or you're off, right? So you might as well get on, and we're going to win. And they did. And they started winning, and then we all wanted to be a part of that. And then you realize quickly the guys coming in wanting to, you know, tape their shoes a special way. Nah, you're not getting that opportunity, right? You're going to be like everybody else. And you either, you know, jump on board or not. And that's kind of been the way all successful things have happened. I mean, either Ted's, you know, not giving himself enough credit, but that group of guys really had to buy in. And it's the hardest when you're the first one. You know, it's easy for me. I come in as a freshman right after they won the national title. So I can't really say I had to buy in. I was already in from high school, right? I came in. They already proved that they knew what they were doing. Not so much for Ted's group. Those guys had to do it. And we all can't thank them enough. And don't let him forget his little internal drill. I'll give Ted a shout out. Don't forget his Bengal bouts. Nobody gives that enough credit. He crushed it. He was famous. And I think your daughter, too. Isn't your daughter doing it, too?
I had two daughters are both two-time Barakabas champions. And, love the experience. That's grown into quite a program as well. And you know, again, it's about making an impact on the world, making the world a better place. You know, all those types of things are what you do learn at Notre Dame.
Knowing that your daughter. Yeah. Beat the hell out of somebody and protect himself. That's not a bad thing.
It feels pretty good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, Ted, I've got a kicker in the house, and he's listening to this interview right now, so I wanted to ask, you know, kind of a twofold question. One, what was it like, you know, being a kicker at Notre Dame? And then on top of that, what did it take, you know, to get to Notre Dame, to be a college-level kicker, a kicker at the highest level? What did it take for you to get yourself into that position?
Well, and I'm excited to hear about your son kicking. I look forward to following his career as he progresses through. I learned from one of the best. He was a walk-on kicker. I was a walk-on kicker when I came in, but Mike Johnston was a kicker in the early, you know, for Coach Faust, and his practice habits were incredible. So it's about practicing and developing that mental and physical routine in a way that allows you to not even think about it in a game. So just being consistent, doing the hard work. And I was an invited walk-on at the same year that a guy by the name of John Carney was an invited walk-on. So I remember calling home and saying, you know, to my parents, hey, there's another walk-on here who's pretty good. I'm not sure. this is gonna be. So finally, once John graduated and went on to pursue a long career in the pros, I got my chance as a fifth-year player the fall of 1987, which was also Tim Brown's Heisman year. That was exciting, but that was the year I got to start. But it was about developing consistency, developing great habits in practice, and challenging yourself in practice. Here's a small example. I would always kick into the wind instead of with the wind. You know, in a game, if you're with the wind, fantastic. But in practice, that forces you to be more precise with every kick you make. So little things like that, you learn to develop that consistency and reliability as a kicker, not just an occasional great kick and then pull one to, you know, off to the left or something. So developing those great practice habits was key.
That's Ted Groddle from the 1980s. We're also on the phone with Dr. Brian Radigan with the team. We've got about 3 minutes left here. Dr. Brian, it seems like all these conferences, everybody has different COVID responsibilities, and I know that's not yours and the team, but I just wondered what your opinion was after now we've heard that Trevor Lawrence is out right now. They talk about 10 days from the symptoms, but then he's got to have cardiac or testing or what. Why does everybody have all these different ways they're going to deal with COVID? I know it's a tough question.
Why? I don't think anybody has that answer. I mean, you're 3 weeks in the Big Ten. You're 10 to 14 days in the ACC. You know, I don't think there's a consensus among any conference among all the doctors, right? And so, and I am not, I'll be the first to say, I am not on any of those phone calls. They know we're just, you know, dumb orthopods. We deal with bones and muscles. When it comes to those viruses, we hate those things. So, but I'll tell you that I respect them, and I appreciate all the work they're putting in. Matt Weisler is the doc who's really heavily involved for our team. He's a brilliant doc, ex-running back at Harvard. He gets it. You know, he's one of those guys that's got his pulse on everything. But I know that, you know, just talking to him, I'm quickly willing to stop listening, because it's never consistent what they have to do and go through. So you want an answer that you will never get, Tim. It's evolving. Every week it seems like something new and another right. hoop that Dr. Leisler's jumping through. He's been, he and Ramon really taken on this extra challenge. Like, they didn't have enough to do already. And done a great job. You know, it's the best you can do. You just, everybody has the same goals as everybody playing. But as far as what's known about the virus, there's no good answer. Why 10 days? Why 3 weeks? Don't know. And I don't know that they know for sure. Right? You just have to pick one and go with it.
Well, I'm sure the Irish are going to prepare that Trevor Lawrence will be playing. I think that'll probably be the...
I think that's a safe bet.
Days or something like that.
Well, they've got a five-star backup, so, I mean, either way, there's going to be some talent at quarterback there. So,
I hope he plays. I really do.
Yeah, we want to play.
You really do. You want the full stack. I'm just happy we're playing today, right?
Yeah.
I hope we get to play next week. Right now, after having a game canceled this year, mm-hmm. I got to tell you, I was telling Coach Kelly the week before that cancellation, before we played, I was giving him a hard time on the field. We're, you know, out there, everybody's in a good mood, and right at midfield, they're all warming up. And I just kind of walked by, and I was like, you know, I'm really enjoying watching you guys have to kind of squirm a little. You know, like, the coaches have to be ready for anything last minute. I go, it's pretty amazing. You had two starters are out, and watching you guys just come on strong. I think it's good for you. You change things up a little bit, just kind of busting his chops a little. And you can imagine what he said back to me. And then you can take it the next week. We had a game pulled away off our schedule because of COVID. And I went right back to him. I said, you know what? Forget everything I said. It was all fun games until we actually lost a game. Now I feel like, well, I can't say it on the radio. I feel bad, right? So I jinxed us. I'm not going to say another word. I'm just happy we get to play every week. And that's Absolutely. My new motto. I will not say that anymore.
There you go. Well, you have a good time down there. I want to tell everybody on your guys' behalf how they can contribute or get more information on Holtz Heroes Foundation. www.holtzheroes.org. And Holtz is HOLTZS. There's no apostrophe in there. HoltzHeroes.org for more information and to make a donation. We thank you both, Ted Grottle and Dr. Brian Radigan, for sharing some time with us. And you both have a good day, and go Irish.
Thanks, Tim. And go Irish.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Stay with us. We are back after a short break with Goshen great, Notre Dame great, quarterback Rick Meyer on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT, your home for the Fighting Irish.
Back to Legacy Heating and Air's Game Day with Tim Growl and Vince D'Addario on Sports Radio 96.1 WSBT.
And we are indeed back.
And our show is brought to you by Legacy Heating and Air. Temperatures will soon be dropping, which means it's time to schedule your $89 preseason tune-up and safety inspection with Legacy Heating and Air. Ensure your family is safe and warm this season. Schedule service online at LegacyHeatingAndAirInc.com. By Irish Realty, Steve Smith Team. When buying or selling a home to building and remodeling, go Irish. Irish Realty. By Lechleitner Door, they open all the right doors. By Monterey Mexican Grill, authentic Mexican served fresh daily at McKinley and Division in Mishawaka, MontereyMexican.com. By South Bend Orthopedics, team physicians for the University of Notre Dame since 1949. By Tim Growl, State Farm Insurance. Get a trusted, familiar name as your good neighbor agent. Call Tim at 232-9981. And by Budweiser. Budweiser, locally distributed by United Beverage Company of South Bend. Football fans, this Bud's for you. Tim?
All right, Vince. So later today at 3:30 p.m., we'll have the Notre Dame game versus those Yellow Jackets of Georgia Tech at 3:30 p.m. right here. Stay with the station all day through. Right now, we're going to go out to California, where it's just slightly warmer than it is here in South Bend. But he knows all about Northern Indiana weather since he was a very successful quarterback at Goshen High School and at Notre Dame, and that would be Rick Meyer. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're doing good, good. First things first, how have you and your family been doing with this COVID and everything?
We're hanging in there. It's been weird, like everyone would say, you know, the experience has been. But my boys are able to do school online for the most part, and I'm just looking forward to having them back home here in about 3 weeks when they get this big, long break over the holidays.
Lacrosse players?
Two of them are, yes. Yeah. Most at Notre Dame, they're on the field right now. I guess they're scrimmaging right now, which is funny to get some texts from some parents that are there. And then Oliver's at Michigan, and Charlie, the youngest, is a junior here in high school.
Oh, wow, wow. Hey, one last thing, too, about while you're out there in California. Are you being affected by the fires? I know you have a winery, and as such, is that causing a problem for you?
You know, yeah. There's two separate issues. The stuff up north where the wine is was just devastated a few weeks ago. That's under control now, but it was just sad to see, you know, some of the people lost a lot. We were pretty lucky, but it still affects the whole industry. And then now down here in Orange County, there's some stuff that's, you know, the air is bad, and we're not affected here in San Diego yet. I don't see anything in the sky, but it kind of blows around, and eventually we'll get some of that smoke. But fortunately, the fires haven't been right next to us, but it's close enough to be paying attention to it.
Sure, sure, sure. So 2020, I think we all are going to be glad to get rid of 2020.
Yes, yes.
Hey, Vince, go ahead. You wanted to talk to about your game last night.
Well, yeah, Rick, I had the opportunity to call Goshen and Mishawaka last night in the playoffs, and obviously you're a Goshen grad, and I just wanted to get some of your thoughts. First of all, I know you haven't been back, but they've got a beautiful new facility out there, you know, turf and the new press box, all that fun stuff, so everything looks really good out there, but how about some of your memories from being a Goshen Redskin all those years ago?
Oh, it was great. You know, growing up with my dad coaching, it was like I was just the gym rat hanging around all those practices and stuff as a little kid. And then, you know, when he stepped aside and I started to play, you know, we had a great run for a while and had some, you know, playing in the Hoosier Dome, playing in stadiums that aren't even there anymore. I mean, that's funny. That's how long it's been. But we had a great run, and now, you know, Kyle Park is in charge, and he was just a young kid when I was playing. So it's just funny to see how things evolve. And I know they've had a tough run the last few years, but they'll get more kids going and hopefully get that thing back. And they're not going to be able to blame it on the facilities. It sounds like everything looks great.
Yeah, it's a beautiful facility. That is for sure.
So, Rick, when you were at Goshen and stuff, I don't think the number of times you've been on, we talked about recruiting. So since you were nearby Notre Dame like this, is that where you always wanted to go?
Not really. I mean, it's funny. As a kid, as a fan, I was like more of a Big Ten follower. I mean, Notre Dame was right there, and I didn't understand probably how large, you know, the reach was for Notre Dame. It just happened to be the school that was down the street from us. But I wasn't raised Catholic. That part wasn't, you know, I wasn't influenced by that. Like some guys that grow up and go to these private Catholic schools, and that's just the dream. It just happened to be the perfect timing. '88 team was national champions while we were state champions, so everything kind of synced up. It was just, I was just lucky to follow Tony Rice and have a year to learn from him, and then have 3 years to play. So I wouldn't have guessed it as a younger kid, but as the recruiting process happened, it just was like, man, this is too good to pass on.
In that process, who was your recruiter from Notre Dame?
Vinny Serrato was there those years, and he was really influential for a lot of guys. And but Barry Alvarez was the defensive coordinator, and he was in direct contact with us quite a bit, and Coach Holtz. So, you know, the whole group, but I wouldn't do it differently. I was excited to go, and I was excited to stay 4 years, and it was an unbelievable experience. And it's fun now that my son's there, and I get to kind of relive it again.
This is game day on WSBT, and we're talking with former Irish and NFL quarterback Rick Meyer. Go ahead, Vince.
Well, I wanted to ask you. You mentioned that you've got a son at Notre Dame, and then you've got a son at Michigan, which is an interesting dynamic, I'm sure, at the dinner table during the holidays.
It's been very pleasant. It's funny. It's competitive. Wow. You know, those two will probably play each other one day. They were supposed to last spring. They're lacrosse players, but the others are friendly rivalry. But everybody has respect for the other. And what'll be interesting is what the youngest one does. I don't know. He might have to offset it a little bit, but we'll see.
So when you came to Notre Dame, obviously Tony Rice was the quarterback, and you were backing him up or whatever. Got any one or two or three points of things that you learned from Tony Rice while you were in that backup role?
Well, Tony was a hard, tough act to follow. I mean, the guy was so talented and explosive, you know, such a great runner. I couldn't duplicate that, but I did my best to try to, you know, do the things he was doing. But mostly I'd say just leadership. I mean, the guys loved him. And that meant, I mean, just standing back and watching people react around him was like something that you would hope you can generate yourself. And that's probably the biggest takeaway. I mean, he was just a awesome, upbeat guy that just never had a bad day, and everybody loved to be in the huddle with him. And I appreciated that from a distance, and I tried to do the same.
So do you have a Holt story or two that you would like to relate to us at all?
I don't know. There were so many funny things. You know, he would jump in. If somebody like jumped off sides or something, he'd pull them out of the huddle, and he'd take their spot. Sometimes it'd be a guard or a tackle. So he's this little bitty guy who would line up across from Bryant Young or something and say, just run the play. And we're like, wait, you're going to get killed in here. Like, what are you, you know, he just wanted to prove, like, one day he decided he could catch a punt. And that story's been told many times, but he broke his finger and he was screaming like he was dying, and he was yelling for the trainer because I think Ricky had fumbled a punt or two, and he just decided he wanted to show us how to do it. And I don't know, it'd probably have been better if he didn't, but there was a lot of fun. I mean, it was very businesslike on game day, but yeah, the stories are endless with the things he would do that, not to try to be funny, it just turned out to be funny in most cases.
Hey, Rick, I wanted to ask you, obviously you were asked to run the ball a lot in college. Did you run the ball a whole lot at Goshen, or was that a different style of offense to go into from high school to college?
It was different. We were pretty balanced. I would say we're about 50-50, but we threw it about 30 times a game, and I would run because I just could run around and take off sometimes, but they weren't really designed runs like we had in college with more of an option-oriented offense. But I don't know. I always felt like it was handy to, you know, be able to move around. And you know, looking back, it would have been nice to, you know, some of these college offenses I see now, they just throw it 50 times. You know, you just, that's nice prep for the next level. But I just, as a competitive person, I just wanted to win, you know, and I didn't care how we did it, what style. I just wanted to win.
So I think, and you both can correct me, about the time you were there, is that when lights started being put up in the stadium for night games? Because I mean, I want to talk about that game against Penn State, but was that still a portable lights during your time when you were there when they put up?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I don't know when the permanent stuff went in, but I know when we played Michigan in 90. Yeah, 90. I swear that it was a night game, right? Like, or at least late afternoon. Mm-hmm. And now there's so many more of those with TV and all that influence, but the NBC thing was pretty new. You know, the stadium was totally different, you know, the 59-075 version. And gosh, now I go back and it's like a different place, you know, it's like a five star setup. And I still miss the intimacy of the old place, but I get, you know, kind of why we are where we are now. It's amazing for the students to have all that extra space.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what memories do you have of the snowball game?
You know, the biggest thing was we had tied previously, you know, Michigan game, and nobody was interested in tying anybody ever again. You know, that was a weird ending. So it wasn't, you know, if we were going to score and, you know, try to win, it was like we're absolutely scoring and we're not going to kick an extra point and tie this thing, because this was before overtime years and stuff. So we were just locked in. We had plenty of time. That last drive was sort of, it wasn't a giant rush. It was just, you know, steady down the field. And it was all about what was the 2-point play going to look like, because it was going to come down to one play, and it did. And Reggie bailed me out and made a diving catch of a fluttering ball in the corner. But it was an awesome feeling when he bounced up and had the ball.
Rick, yeah, Tony Roberts tells the story. Sorry, Vince.
No, go ahead.
He couldn't see from up in the press box whether he had caught it or not. So he wasn't quite sure. He had to delay his call until he could actually see it.
Yeah, I bet it's down in that corner, and the people that I hear from people still, you know, who are there and maybe on that end of the field, and they ran out on the field, or they were clear on the other side and they could see it from there. But it wasn't easy. Reggie helped me. We made it dramatic. I guess it was good for TV.
Well, speaking of dramatics, I real quick, I wanted to get your thoughts on overtime in college football, because if there was an overtime, my guess is you guys aren't going for two there, and it kind of changes the whole complexion of that game. So what are your thoughts about college moving into overtime now?
I think it's exciting. There's a lot more scoring. It kind of screws up some of the records and, you know, the number of points and all that. A guy can score four times in overtime, but... You know, it was – I think you just learn over time. I mean, whatever the old version was fine until it wasn't. And then once overtime was introduced, it just was – it's just a better, more exciting finish. It's like extra innings, you know. It's just
– Yeah.
It's just more important, it feels like, at the end. But, you know, that's just the evolution. You're right. We would have tied it up and then rolled the dice on whatever happens in overtime. That would have been different. But I never ever got to do that. I never.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't the way you finish those games. So now watching these 3-4 overtime kind of games, it's exciting. It gets crazy. running out of plays. I think you start running out of stuff.
Hey, I want to ask you about this year's team, Rick. I'm sure you follow, especially with your son being at Notre Dame now, you follow the team. And I wanted to get your thoughts just kind of how things are going with this year's team.
Yeah, I watch pretty closely. I don't know everybody anymore, but it's fun to support the team. And, of course, you know, when they keep winning, it's exciting to be in the mix. I'm watching these college game day, and it's, you know, Notre Dame's relevant. And that's awesome. So, yeah. I think it's going to get very real very soon. next weekend, finally, the game everyone's kind of had circled all year. And I think our squad, you know, if we're healthy and firing after today, it could be a really good matchup. Clemson's scary, but I guess you find out quickly who you are when you got to play the best.
That nice litmus test, right?
Yep.
We're with Rick Meyer on the Legacy Heating Air Game Day show here on WSBT. So a quick evaluation of Ian Book's progress.
Well, I'm not going to be critical of anything. I don't know enough. I just appreciate his his consistency. He's had the reins here now for quite a while and hasn't lost many games. So I'm pulling for him. I think it's he's been a great leader. He's got some guys around him. Gosh, I'm jealous. Some of these big, long tight ends and receivers are amazing. But he's making the most of the opportunity he got, and I think he's lucky to have Tommy Reese there to help him. I don't care about who's calling the plays and what they are. You got to make them work, and he's making them work. And again, you know, they haven't really played the best competition yet, and that's going to happen soon, and we'll find out a lot more once we get into those games.
So what kind of watcher are you? We were talking Mike Golick Jr. last week, and he's thrown the remote at the TV before, and a couple other weeks people say they got to watch it by themselves, that their wife walks in the room, they say, get out of here. So what kind of watcher are you?
I'm not that stressed at this point. It's been long enough. I just want to see him win, and I like to have him in the mix. I know how competitive it is. I mean, across the board, you know, there's so many good teams, but this year is so weird with guys opting out and then certain conferences not playing until just now. So I don't know. I don't get emotional about it, but I want to see him win, and I probably won't ever throw the remote, but I guess I'll probably get tested next week and see how that feels.
Just have another glass of wine.
That's right.
There you go. All right, Rick, we appreciate you getting up to be on with us here. You go have a great date again, and, you know, I'll probably bug you next year again because we always enjoy having you on.
No problem, guys. Great talking with you.
Hey, right, thanks, Rick.
Thank okay.
You. So, Vince, how about a real quick analysis, about 20 seconds, and then the score.
Well, like we kind of brought it up when we were talking with Brian. I just think that this is going to be a game where if Notre Dame does what they need to do, if they take care of business, if they do, they stick to the game plan, they're not going to have any problem winning this game. Winning this game is not going to be the issue. It's going to be, can they take another step offensively with eyes on next week? I mean, this is the game, like Rick said, this is the game that everybody's got scheduled. This is the litmus test. You know, the combined record of Notre Dame's opponents, it's not good. So, you know, what can they do against another top five team? That's the question, and we're going to get our answer next week. This game is going to be a ground and pound for Notre Dame. They're going to take advantage of that, and it should be fun. I got 45-13 with an Irish
45-13. Thanks, Vince. We'll see you next week. Please join us back here on next week at 2 p.m. as we get you ready for the Fighting Irish versus those number one Clemson Tigers. For Vince Denario, this is Tim Growl. Again, we thank you for listening to the Legacy Heating and Air Game Day Show. This is your home for Fighting Irish football on Sports Radio 96.1 WST. Go Irish!